Greetings, I'm your host, James Gillen, and we've got another great show tonight. There's so much going on, I don't even know where to start. But there's a lot of announcements I need to make, and we are moving into this harvest full moon, so there's a lot of energy happening, you know, a lot of processing going on, and people, you know, having to reevaluate things on every level, you know, and take a long, deep breath. And that's what winter's all about, is about going into introversion you know, thinking about how you might be able to do things a little better and where you might have made a few mistakes here and there. But, you know, there's only a mistake if you didn't gain the wisdom from the experience. So I don't believe mistakes. I just think they're lessons and chances to reevaluate and maybe do things a little better on the next round. But anyway, the last 3 weekends at the ranch, we've got a group Skywatch with Jay Seti in September, and that's on the 27th, the 28th, and 29th. And so that's our Japanese counterpart, you know, and they've been coming to the ranch on a regular basis. And we've been doing a lot of work with them and with Japan, and a lot of healing work over there with Japan as well, as helping out, helping them get through the tsunami and other events that are happening. But a wonderful group over there. So they're going to be here. And so if anybody wants to come and join in that Skywatch, feel free. And remember, that's the 27th, the 28th, and the 29th of September. We've got October 4th, 5th, and 6th. We have the Exploration of Freedom Technologies, and that's a weekend with Spencer Barkley, with Trent Goodbody, and Nathan. And we're going to have a speaker from Divine Providence as well. So that's going to be a really nice event to, you know, kind of understand a little bit more about, you know, the new freedom technologies coming out and, you know, how to really, you know, stand your ground and you know, stand up for your own divine rights. And it goes way beyond constitutional rights. It goes back to the source itself, to your divine rights. So that's going to be a really interesting weekend with a lot of incredible information. So don't miss that one. And then on the October 11th through the 13th, we're going to have the Ambassadors Training. And that's going to be the last workshops here at the ranch. And so you can come and engage the energy here and hang out on the vortex and have your interdimensional minds blown open. So it's quite an event. And we're going to talk about all the different planes and dimensions, who's who in the universe, contact, how to create contact, you know, how to heal unseen negative influences and make sure you're not contacting a regenerate or a lesser evolved being. So a lot of the information is going to go throughout the ambassador training, and it's something that's very important right now, because there's just so much nonsense in ufology and as far as contact that, you know, we need to really, you know, get an outline and get grounded in base common sense and really stop giving up our power. You know, the bottom line is that you are the ETs you've been waiting for, and you've all incarnated here, and you've had lives on other planes and dimensions, and you've come all the way from the source and come down through the dimensions to get here. So anyway, it's just a grand reunion with the greater family of man, and that's going to be an amazing weekend. And there's 3 engagements off the ranch, and so we're going to have an evening with James Gillen in Eugene, Oregon, and that with Doug Black's UFO Meetup Group, and that's on October 20th. So you can just go to esetievents@gmail.com if you want to find out more about that. Ascension Rising, which is going to be a wonderful conference in Sedona, and that's November 1st through the 3rd. And if you want to find out more about that conference, they've got a great lineup of speakers. So you can go to galacticu.com, or you can email sierra@galacticu.com, or you can phone them at 720-336-1710. And if you want to find out more about that, you can just Google it. You know, just go and Google Ascension Rising Sedona, and all the information will pop up if you don't have a pen handy. And then after that, I'm going to be at the Star Knowledge Conference in Palm Springs, and that's November 8th to the 11th. And that's going to be a great conference. And so if you want to find out more about that, just, you know, Google Star Knowledge Conference Palm Springs, and that'll pop up and give you all the information you need. But that's November 8th and 11th. So, you know, while I'm out there, I think I'm going to take a run out to Giant Rock again. Last time I was out there, we had some wonderful ships fly over and power up. And you know, had some wonderful experience, some incredible energy, some photographs. And we had a ship cruise right across the desert floor, just above the ground. And it left no dust, no trail. It was amazing. You know, it just cruised right in front of us across the desert. So that was pretty strange. But anyway, we got it on film as well. So luckily, one of the people there had a camera and was filming it. But there's a lot going on right now. I mean, it's getting really interesting out there. There's so many things happening. I'm having some crazy experiences. There's a beautiful woman that I used to hang out with named Nahi, and she's a very good friend of the ranch. And she's a kahuna over there in Hawaii. Some people say don't say kahuna. Some people say huna. So I don't know. I don't know. That's their – they can figure that one out over there. I don't know. She's just a great friend. And amazing healer, very gifted, very tapped in woman, but she's crossed over and she's been crossed over for a while now, but she's been ringing my phone over and over again. And it makes this weird, strange noise. So, it's funny how that's been going on and over again. And then she keeps coming in and talking to us in spirit, you know, so we have some amazing connections there. And, so everybody say a prayer and say a prayer for Nahi, and she's still out there working. You know, she's working on the higher planes and helping people. So she's not really gone. She's just and had a little transition, but she's still around. A lot of other things happening. There is on a funny note, I have to say it's funny, but I guess there's a website called UFO Chronicles, and there's some guy by the name of Amatrine or something like that. I think he named himself after a rock or a crystal or something. But he's doing everything he can to diss the ranch, you know, and it's everything from our walls are painted in blood, and we do, I don't know, some weird ceremonies here to, I mean, I can go on and on with all the nonsense, saying I'm Illuminati, and I work with the reptilians or something, and I'm here to probe and take people's DNA and convert it and make everybody slaves or something. I don't know. It's so beyond ridiculous because he hasn't done any research, and my books and my radio shows and everything have been totally going against the New World Order. And I've been talking about the Archon Network and healing unseen negative influences and how to get rid of these reptilian and grays that keep harassing people. And we've been doing that for 30 years here, clearing people. So it's funny, this guy totally accuses us of being in cahoots with them. But I think it's almost hilarious, the things that he comes to. Our sign in front, we had a sign that was painted by a local artist, and she painted all the different symbols of all the different nations, you know, hanging from a winged heart, you know. So he tied that all together and said that we were sponsoring all the religions that enslaved people forever. And the whole purpose of the artist's painting was for unity consciousness, saying it's time for us all to get along, to start, you know, sticking to the basic principles necessary for a healthy society and environment, you know, like brother, sister, love, universal peace, individual freedom and prosperity for everybody. It was all about unity consciousness, and that's what the sign was painted for, and this guy twisted it into some dark demonic thing. So, well, Amatrine, we need a new second coat of paint on the ranch here, so if you want to come up and donate some blood, we'd love to help you out there. But we don't paint with blood. We just go to Benjamin Moore, and we get Tibetan orange, which is what the ranch is painted with. So it's a very spiritual color. It's on almost all the temples around the world. And it's a beautiful orange. It's a sunrise. It represents the sunrise, our awakening, and our divine intellect. There's all different things around Tibetan orange, the color. So you can go to Benjamin Moore. You don't have to go to your local blood bank to paint our walls. So anyway, it's so ridiculous. I had to bring this up because it's almost funny. I mean, it's the correlations this guy tries to make, doing no research whatsoever in the work that we've been doing over the years. And it just goes off. And I feel sorry for, you know, anybody in UFO Chronicles. If you're in there, go check it out and maybe post some things and say, hey, you kind of went off the deep end here, Sonny. And I know you're just getting started in this field, but you might want to do a little research before you go attacking somebody, you know, and trying to persuade a lot of people that may not know what's going on that are newcomers to the UFO ufology or whatever. But anyway, putting that aside, I think I've got everything knocked out here as far as all the events, but definitely check out the Ascension Rising Conference in Sedona. That's going to be great. And the Star Knowledge Conference in Palm Springs. And you can just Google those and it'll pop up. And don't miss the Ambassador Training here coming up on the 13th and the Freedom Technologies on the 4th, 5th, and 6th. And the Skywatch, the group Skywatch. And you can go to esetireservations@gmail.com. And again, that's esetireservations@gmail.com. Or just go to eseti.org, and there's all the information's there if you want to. The events aren't on the site. So if you want to contact and find out more about the events, just go to the eseti reservation email. I think we've got all that down. Oh, yeah, thanks to Alfred Weber for bringing that to my attention about the UFO Chronicles. I know he posted some things in there and said, you know, about his experiences here at the ranch. But, you know, nothing but positive and very professional. And the evidence is, preponderance of evidence is overwhelming, you know. This guy went into everything saying all the photographs were fakes, and Khan, who's a wonderful being. If you ever met Khan, anybody that's met Khan, he's a gentle giant. He spends, you know, 21 days in dark retreats and caves. He's one of the most enlightened people on the planet. And this guy totally smeared him and slandered him and said he faked all the photos that he took here and everything else. The problem is there's multiple witnesses when he took them and investigators here at the time that actually, you know, grabbed his camera and his cell phone and checked it all out to make sure his story was correct. So, sorry, Mr. Amatrine or whatever name you gave yourself. And also, too, Gilliland is not a French derivative. That is Illuminati name. I'm sorry. It really doesn't have anything to do with France. It's, you know, go to either Scotland or Ireland. You'll see the Gilliland name everywhere. So anyway, that being said, you know, it was a nice try. Actually, it was a pitiful try. But, you know, you've only established your character, not ours. So with that being said, we had some pretty neat experiences up here on the ranch recently. We went on a journey. When I say we, I didn't go, but the rest of the crew here all went up to the mountain. And everybody's been asking us, you know, what have you gone up there? Have you gone up to the mountain? You know, have you checked out, you know, where that big door opens and things like that? And I have. I've been up there a couple times. And actually, I went up there with Tom Dongo once. We had some pretty amazing experiences and saw a lot of crazy things while we were up there, but the energy is intense up there. And I don't recommend it if you're not on the path, you know, pretty much on the path, because you're going to have problems going up there. Just energetically, you're going to have problems. So, it's a really high intensity place. And the times that I've gone up there, I saw strange rock formations, swirls, huge lava faces where this light opens up. And I think they just dematerialize the wall there, the face, and go in and out of it. It's what it looks like. And the other night, we saw a light open up took over about one-third of the mountain. The light was so bright, and something came in and out. I think the mothership landed in there or something, But anyway, we had quite a crew up there that went up to the top of the mountain to check it out. And my roving reporter here, John Kelly, is here to clue us in on what happened on that tour. So, John, are you with us?
I sure am, James. Great to be with you again.
Hey, welcome to the show.
All right.
Go ahead.
We were up on Mount Adams. It was a longstanding ambition for a number of us to follow in your footsteps, so to speak, and to get face-to-face a little closer to the mountain, the source of so much mystery here that we've been observing at the ranch. It was a fascinating experience and certainly a memorable night, one I won't soon forget.
Yeah, we did a lot of experiments. It was funny. I mean, the footage that you got up there was incredible, including that fox that just walked right into your camp and was hanging, you know, he was like walking right up to your sleeping bags and just walking all around you like it was one of the crew.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I mean, I was very open to experiencing whatever would happen on the mountain as some kind of message with a higher dimensional connection. And so that fox was so colorful. It was a silver fox with red coloring. And so it was, in other words, it was a mixed breed of red and silver fox. I had never seen an animal like that. It was just, I mean, it had a very powerful facial features, including his eyes, which we got to see quite clearly. Because as you mentioned, while we were hanging out at this beautiful viewpoint that we had found, we were just having a snack and so on. And it's so strange. I mean, there's an element of synchronicity in this, James, I guess is what I'm leading to. You see, some granola that we had brought up with us apparently had been spilled while one of our group members was picking something up out of our packing. And so we just received notice of the spill when the fox suddenly came around. And it may be that the fox had been stalking us from a distance, so to speak, and the scent of the spilled food had aroused it. But that was the moment. In other words, it was somehow this chain of events that led to the fox coming upon us. And simply it entered the campsite, and it was following a scent trail to find the food. It snatched up a bit of the spilled granola and just circled around us. We, at the same time, started to advance to get around it. I, in particular, of course, I wanted a closer look, and I wanted to operate my camera to get the picture. And the other group members were, of course, concerned that if we were to encourage that animal to be on site with us, then later in the evening we might expect a return visit and so on. And so we tried to create a vibe about, you know, showing some that we were occupying the space temporarily and that we needed to not have any more food sharing with that animal. But it had a very beautiful coat. It didn't appear unhealthy in any ways. It was very calm. And, you know, I walked towards my camera, I sort of, you know, I was testing or measuring that animal's responsiveness, you know, if it was aggressive or not. And I just sort of took it upon myself to sort of like act natural and, you know, almost, I was just doing my own thing. It was doing its thing and I was doing my thing, you know, and not really trying to make it feel like I was intervening with it. And as a result, I did get some excellent footage. Again, it was just a great wildlife moment. And no creatures or people were harmed. And of course, it was you know, and it was a meeting point between us and the natural environment. And if that was a spirit messenger of some sort, you know, if it had important symbolism in the Yakima community, for example, then, you know, maybe we would want to know more of that, you know, the wisdom side of that experience, not just something about food, but rather bridging the gap, so to speak, between two worlds, in this case, the animal and the human kingdoms. Of course, that mountain is more to it than just those two dimensions, but yeah, it left a powerful impression on us, and it's some very memorable images that I will be I'll be publishing eventually.
Great. You know, I was wondering about that because, you know, the in the medicine cards, you know, and the animals all have messages, you know, they're messengers. And, you know, having the way that fox appeared and the way it walked in and just hung out there and just made itself comfortable, it shows it was aware of your spiritual nature there and the spiritual nature of the group. You know, it didn't feel, you know, threatened in any way. And it was pretty large fox too, you know, and sometimes you always wonder, you hear stories about how, you know, shapeshifters will come or, you know, shamans will actually look through the eyes of the animals, you know, and send the animals in to check out a campsite to see what your medicine is or what you're doing, you know, and, you know, so it almost seemed like it was just strange. I mean, I was watching the footage of it, the way it was acting, it was really checking you guys out and you know, hanging out and it was pretty interesting.
Well, it certainly was a highlight. And I think on reflection, while we discuss this now, we could say that some of the archetypes of that moment included an act of offering that we sacrificed a little bit of food, so to speak, in an act of service to the nature spirits, Pashuseva in Sanskrit, you know, service to the animal kingdom, so that we fulfilled a sort of an organic ritual emerged in that moment where it was an act of offering that the group, you know, as part of our being, you know, the opportunity to be up on that space and to, you know, to share that space, we entered that, I guess we could say that we entered in a sacred way, so to speak, involuntarily, but we fulfilled an act of offering by that happening.
Yeah. The space up there, I mean, the energy, I've been up there before and I know exactly where you guys were and where you went, but boy, it's the energy up there is intense. Did you have any like sensations of the energy while you're up there in that area?
So it manifested for me in personal ways that invoked my memories of the portal-like phenomena that we experienced down here at the ranch and on the land around the ranch. Portal phenomena, meaning that during the stay on the mountain, I had perceptions of interdimensional phenomena, including UFOs and contact with beings, mm-hmm. Dimensional beings. And the characteristic of those contacts was again, very much reminiscent of the dimensional phenomena that we've demonstrated here on the land. Not only, for example, like the contacts with the spirit animals that I've shared with guests, multiple witnesses, you know, seeing the same entity on the field of dreams, but other experiences as well. I think, you know, I was informed more deeply of the portal-like nature of the area by spending that night on the mountain. And I think in part for me as an individual, although I've been studying, you know, experiences and phenomena of this region for some years now, I still think that the night on the mountain served for me as a form of mental clearing, where I reached a point where I could become lucid enough to have those perceptions and to also understand them within the context of the environment. I somehow became a little more sensitive to the portal-like nature of the mountain through that night and through those contexts. Mm-hmm.
I know you had quite a group up there. I know you had Nate and Jana. Oh, yeah. And Nathan and Tiffany up there, quite a group. You know, everybody has different perceptions and different connections, you might say. So, did you notice were the others having some pretty interesting experiences as well? Anything you noticed with them?
Well, we went through it together, and due to some different circumstances, the type of night that we had, many of us were up through the night or for most of the night, and so on. Meaning that there were different, we were engaged in different types of interactions, but there wasn't necessarily as much of a debriefing time as mm-hmm. perhaps could have been. I respect and know from having spent time with Nate and Jen in the past about their contact with nature spirits here on the land, as well as their encounters on the mountain. And so I frame my experiences within that context. Mm-hmm. When people talk like inner earth beings and things like that, I feel a little more sensitive to that now because of what I saw. But to answer your question, I think that, yeah, were we processing different things? Well, let's say that it was in some ways a little bit of a harsh environment to be up there on an overnight, the way we did it anyways. Mm-hmm. So we had a little bit of exposure to elements and other things that were going on that in other words, sort of kept people up at night. And this was part of the sort of the challenge, so to speak, is to find some tranquil place inside to get a few hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we were sky watching and people were seeing power up activity overhead. And mm-hmm. I was particularly sensitive to Nate and Jana's experience just witnessing them, in that space because they had told me from their previous visit earlier in the summer about high energy experiences. And it was almost as if, you know, people become inspired by spirit in such a way that they become a little effervescent. You know, people start to get a little bubbly getting giddy. And, you know, some of them might have to do with low oxygen. But that with being one of the contributing factors, as I said, to the challenge of that night. But at the same time, I was sensitive to this idea that, you know, people were having interactions. So again, I didn't like lean into everybody and you know, interrogate the witnesses. I was up there as a co-participant, and having Nate and Jana there, their historic reference points, having been with you here on the land for so many years, was very helpful for me in assimilating what I experienced directly. But I would also say, at the same time, you know, back to this dimensional question, which I think is one of the fascinating points about the mountain. People are curious about this portal nature, gateway nature, the interdimensional travel, you know, between the, particularly with the UFO entities entering the mountain and exiting the mountain as you've observed over many years. It's such a strange thing because the experiences are not unlike the experiences of a spiritual phenomenon. Like when I say that I encountered an entity, the brief story is there's not a lot to this. My experiences are generally very, very simple and low key. It's simply that in my mind's eye, I was having a series of visions, and it began with I started to perceive like UFOs that were like as if they were solid objects, not balls of light, but like structured craft. I perceived them as if they were just a few wavelengths away from us, you know, in another dimension, and I was seeing them, you know, psychically. And then I saw in that series, in that state of mind, I saw an entity, and this being reminded me of was like a dwarf from the Lord of the Rings. It was like a dude who was like a stocky build, you know, solid build, but with deep set, large eyes and a large nose and a long beard and gray and dark haired. And the dude was connecting with me, and I was having a contact experience. But, but to tell it further, it's like the contact or the dialogue was happening is almost like it was a conversation that was happening underwater. So my ability to what you would call word for word, if there was such, you know, if there were words between us, so to speak, it wasn't like that. It's sort of like in my mind, I would have to reach deep under that water. The pressure, in other words, it's some kind of heavy dude. It was all light and joy, but the presence was kind of intense too, and the dialogue was weighted. In other words, it's not something light and easy for me to remember the words. This is not unlike I've possibly told you in the past in one of our interviews, James, when I had a Sasquatch encounter up in British Columbia when I was a child. And that you and I have talked about this before, because both of us have ideas about the Sasquatch and the light beings that are kind of, you know, that are in the area around them, that they transform between the two and so on. But when I had that childhood experience, I had a dream immediately after the encounter where I was sitting on the lap of a white-haired, like a grandfather Sasquatch. The grandfather Sasquatch was teaching me something. But if you asked me to recount word for word, I couldn't tell you. It's just that flow was somewhere deep, you know? Like it was underwater.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because I connected with an old gray-haired one up here, and he had a couple young ones with him that he was teaching, I guess. And then I've had my own encounters like 50 feet away, face to face, you know, later. But you know, that's a whole nother story. But I totally relate to the old gray-haired one, and I gotta remember his name. I forgot his name. I wrote it down. But interesting, they do cruise around here on the ranch, and some people see them here, and they're very selective on who they make themselves known to.
So I was curious when we went on the mountain, as if there would be a Sasquatch, Yeti, you know, Bigfoot dimension to that journey, and I don't know that there was necessarily on that night, although the other members may have things to relate that I haven't yet heard. I was sensitive to the possibility of that emerging from that trip. Quite frankly, James, it's just that so many astounding things have happened during my time visiting here on the ranch, and I've been able to film, you know, substantially quite a few of them, that I remain continually open to having access to these kinds of experiences, even though, as I say, my recounting of them is kind of boring. I mean, there's not a lot there. I'm saying, oh yeah, you know, I was party to that. I felt the connection. I was sensitized to it. And if my clutter, you know, my city driven mind, you know, the way I think all the time and the way I need to, you know, verify or prove or test or whatever, everything, you know, that maybe cluttering, my clarity, my perception, being on that mountain that night where I had to think about cold, you know, getting air, you know, staying warm, those kinds of things. My mind was less cluttered, and it may be part of how it was that I was maybe able to journey a little further and you know, push the envelope of consciousness for myself a little bit. It made me reflect on both those things, that possibly I spend a little too much time thinking about or overanalyzing things. And the other is how, you know, First Nations people, Native American people certainly understand going into nature and a little bit of a challenge, you know, to survive away from the tribe, the community for a little while. Opens the door to higher consciousness experiences. So the Buddha retreated into the woods to meditate.
Well, we did a little bit of analytical stuff up there, because I thought it was interesting, and it was totally unplanned. But I think it was I think it was probably around 10 or so. I'm not sure what time it was that I went out there, 9:30 or 10. But it was funny, because I was here at the ranch, and you guys are about, what, 13 miles away. And I had took out my laser, and I go, I bet they're right about there. And I had no idea where you were going. And it was funny, just totally pinpointed you guys.
It's true, and the cameras proved that you were able to shine the laser directly into the camera with no radio or telephone assistance.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's kind of funny. It was like intuitive. You know, I bet they're right about there, and boom, and the laser went right directly into the camera. So
I think that says a lot about the synergy and the unity of the community that's here, that people, even when they're separated by substantial distances, we're capable of apparently of effective teamwork, even without, you know, email, Twitter, cell phones, or any other kinds of means. I think we hoped that we would have contact with you that way so we could do that, but we didn't. We weren't at such a high level of organization or staffed at such a high level, et cetera, that we had all the two-way radios going. It just worked out that way. It was our good fortune that we have such good synergy and harmony that we're able to perform that well, even at range. It's only a testimony of how well we work together.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of interesting how I know Jana had a green laser and she was shooting it back. And so we had a really good idea on what a laser would look like from the mountain.
It did several things. The laser, by shining your laser, which is an intense blue light, you have a 1 watt laser. It's a very powerful light that it's coherent light that can transmit up to 82 miles. It's unlike any other light source on the ground. When we're looking down into the Trout Lake Valley to try to find the ranch, there's no other light that color or that bright. So we knew it was you. And by shining that light to us, you helped us to locate the ranch from our observation point, which was a little challenging. So we created some data points together. We ascertained the visibility of your laser from the ground to that location on the mountain. A, we determined that. B, we determined within the camera's frame of reference the precise location of the ranch and even the Field of Dreams and the tower and other topographical features here on the property. So we did do some basic surveying together, and that will add up, because I know there's more mysteries. I know you were encouraging us to traverse across the face of the mountain to go to one of the famous mystery spots where we always see that portal light activity, that intensely bright light, right? And we were a few, you know, a few 10, 5 degrees or 7 degrees away from that. We weren't quite on that. And that was, you know, this trip didn't accomplish that. It set the stage maybe for next season. I think this is really good adventure and helps to, as I said earlier, being on the mountain only reinforced some of my perspectives on what's happening here when I'm at the ranch, because portal-like phenomena, dimensional gateway phenomena, like objects manifesting and dematerializing in front of us, is happening here on this land. And so being on the mountain, which is like the archetype, so to speak, of all of our clairvoyance and ascension and so on, being there and having related experiences, really helped me to complete the circle on one level of understanding. So were we enthusiastic about going back? I think it created a lot of enthusiasm to revisit this journey, to deepen our experience with it, and to collect more data, which I foresee we'll be able to do next year. I mean, obviously our team works well enough that we could, you know, communicate and have, you know, be all watching each other at the right time when the lasers are turned on. So with a little more hindsight, you know, like a best practices list, we'll have an even better set of experiences in the seasons to come.
Yeah, I was thinking about, I mean, very few people have access or even get a laser like the one that I have. I mean, because that one actually burns the ground. You know, you can start a fire with it. But so, the, you know, judging by that and by the lights that, you know, the campfire you had up there and the lights that I saw from here, it was nowhere near the luminosity of the lights that we see on the mountain, especially when the door opens. That thing's just massive. And the lights that we see on the mountain, the ones that move around, you know, on the mountain, are definitely not anything of probably human origin. And one thing is that, I mean, because of the intensity, I mean, the luminosity coming from the mountain 13 miles away is just incredible. But one thing,
the amount of candles.
Yeah, the candle power. One thing I wanted you to talk about is that you're up in that area where we see these lights moving around quite often. And can you describe the area that, you know, the lava fields and the area? I mean, could any kind of a vehicle traverse that area?
Well, this is an important question. So, again, one of the things I was sensitive to as I got further and further up on the mountain was passability for larger vehicles. And while I would suggest that the teams who are responsible for maintenance on the roads and paths may be using vehicles like bobcats, small, path clearing, road clearing type equipment, there are a number of factors that contribute to things like visibility and line of sight. So from a distance from 13 miles, you know, the surface of the mountain kind of looks kind of simple to us. It's, you know, it's kind of splotchy and blotted. There's some trees and there's some snow, and, you know, it doesn't have a zillion different features. It's sort of, you know, a dozen or so characteristics that you can see from this distance. But as you get onto the mountain, now you start to getting in, you're into a crevasse, and now you've got a lot of thick forest around you. And now you're in a meadow or in a depressed bowl, or now you're at some lake way up at high altitude that you can't see from below. So all of these topographical features and so on, on the micro scale, start to become important, because as humans, you know, I'm 6 feet tall. So I have this, my range of vision in a forest or faced with a cliff and so on, this, I can only see so much. It's not as easy, in other words, as it appears from a distance. So then when you bring in things like operating cameras and getting line of sight and getting subjects into focus and stuff added to that, it's tricky. But again, back to your point is that operating large vehicles, once we're getting up there into those meadows and stuff, no, I absolutely, having spent time up there now, I absolutely don't see large vehicles moving around in those parts where we were, or where we were looking towards the that mountain over the millennia, or however many hundreds of thousands of years, for goodness sakes, a long time, has been throwing out a lot of rock in the form of lava. Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of unpulverized volcanic rock in this region. Now, there's some very old rock here right on the land, for example. It's easy to, you know, see its volcanic nature. And some of it's more weather-worn. But as you get closer and you start getting on the slopes of the mountain, there's just tons and tons and tons of either this sort of pebble-sized or palm-sized or small boulder-sized chunks of this volcanic rock. And some of it's stacked up like, you know, machines had laid it there. It's obviously it's just the result of an eruption, but it's like if you went to an industrial site to see a quarry or something like that. Well, it's just this stuff is just strewn all over the side of the mountain, and on both sides of that is all this forest and, you know, land that's really kind of impassable to large equipment getting in and out of there. You know, would be a huge, huge engineering undertaking. So it doesn't make any sense to me, bottom line, having been up on the mountain now, the concept of people are putting large machinery up there past the area where there's any kind of road access, it makes no sense whatsoever. You can't get that machinery in and out or on or off the mountain. Unless you were leaving it up there full time, then there would be evidence of that as well, that there would be these machines parked up there that you could see from an airplane or from a satellite. And there aren't any of those. Yeah. So you can't transport your equipment on or off the mountain. You know, you can't transport it, and you can't operate it on the mountain. So what equipment are we talking about?
Well, there's no roads. One thing is it's a wilderness area, so it's totally illegal to have any vehicles up there whatsoever. Two, there's no roads. And three, we film these objects coming over the top of the mountain, which is just sheer, as steep as you can get, coming down glaciers, going over sheer lava faces, and then down a lava bed, and traversing this lava bed with just massive boulders with giant crevasses in between them, and going over all this whole lava field and moving on down. And I was thinking about that. I go, you show me a vehicle that can do that. I mean, first of all, a snowmobile might be able to take a run down the snowy part, you know, with some kamikaze run, you know. And but once you hit the lava face or the cliff, you're dead, you know. Skiing wouldn't be it, you know.
The skiing point is a very good question, because referencing back to the one of the lasers that we had there, which is just, you know, an average strength output for the naked eye, as you said, it was really almost indiscernible. So how skiers are not necessarily, generally we won't expect the skier to be wearing a helmet mounted laser.
It would just be,
you know, some kind of little LED type of a light, halogen maybe. So the likelihood of us seeing them is even more diminished. But I have stuff. I have video of lights slaloming down the side of Mount Adams on the glaciers.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, what kind of lights are those? Because as you said, even the small laser that we had wasn't enough to generate enough of that kind of light. What kind of lights are we talking about?
Yeah. And then, you know, what's interesting that doing that too is like these, you look at where, I mean, I followed the whole, I went up there and I did my own little track and I filmed it, the path that this object took. Hmm. And that object, once it, you know, you'd have to go from a glacier to a cliff to lava to another glacier to a cliff and traverse all that area in a vehicle. People, oh, that's a snowmobile, or that's a, they have all these ideas. And I go, you show me any vehicle whatsoever that could make that run. And I would, other than a hovercraft, I mean, something would have to be anti-gravity or hovering. There's nothing that could make that trip.
There's no common practice that I'm aware of even military units driving hovercraft up and down mountains. I mean,
no.
To what end, right?
No, so I know I can't come up with, I mean, I'm trying to find a rational reason.
Of course.
You know, for these lights and what they're doing up there and the way they're moving, and there's nothing, you know, we had Robert Salas up here, you know, and he was in charge of the nuclear bases there, you know,
Robert Salas. I love reading his material on Facebook.
Yeah, he was here and he saw this green light moving all over the mountain. And he was amazed. He saw it and he goes, I don't know what that is, because that's definitely not any kind of a skier or hiker or anything else. He watched it move all over the mountain and just the way it moved. But, you know, you think of the list of people we've had up here, almost everybody that's who's who in the community, in the UFO community. We've had physicists up here. A lot of triple PhD Boeing engineers, Air Force base commanders have come up here and air traffic controllers, and all of them have seen these ships and say that they're not ours. We don't know what they are. They're not ours, and they're definitely nothing. They're unknowns. You know, when you have that large of a you know, the witness base, you know, and professional witnesses as well, the only conclusion you can come to is that there are definitely unidentified flying objects and on the ground moving all over that mountain and flying to and fro the mountain and around the mountain. That, I mean, that's the only logical conclusion one could come to.
Yeah. And so, you know, they live here, you know, if we go on to that land, we're going to encounter them, and mm-hmm. maybe we need, you know, to become better educated about this rather than, you know, getting all skeptic and, you know, debunker and close-minded. As you said, by making that journey myself, my mind, it helped me to take some of the pressure off of, you know, well, I'm just misinterpreting the data, you know, it's just John reaching the wrong conclusions, right?
Yeah.
The closer I got to the mountain, that skepticism was undermined by the hard realities of the nature of the terrain, the skilled observer measurements of light amplitude that you were able to report as someone with a lot of years of laser use and as hosted people with their own laser equipment. You've seen a lot of these lights. You're able to tell us, you know, relative brightness of the light that we had. That's all. This is all. This data is kind of, you know, locked in facts. So the more facts I gather about these experiences, the more my mind is opened to wanting to understand the nature of these entities, and our relationship with them, rather than worrying, you know, or begin over getting over analytical and needing to find, you know, some kind of dinosaur explanation that, you know, that's guaranteed to not hold up to the truth. So, yeah, yeah. It's this, you know, it's part, I think it's, we're called upon in this time, you know, with this, certainly here on this land to expand our vision and to reach for things that may seem fanciful at first, but whose discernible reality and truth becomes more and more measurable the more we strive towards that type of understanding, the more the interaction we get. And of course, James, your personal experience as a contactee is only, I feel, you know, it's grown and amplified over, as the more you've practiced, you know, the more incredible things have happened. And this seems to be how it goes. If we cultivate the garden, we plant the seed and we tend it and take care, then the fruits are going to start to come from that orchard, and we'll find ourselves with an abundance of experience and understanding at the end of it.
You know, there are every once in a while we'll get somebody come up here, and they'll come up here on a night where it's overcast or you know, a lousy night, and there's just not much going on, or the ships stay high because of a bad attitude, you know, the attitude of the people on the ground. And it's funny that, you know, we do have people that come up, but just not very often. Every once in a while, it'll be a slow night and bad weather or whatever, and then they go back and write an article, you know, about it. But, I mean, you've been here, I don't know, how long have you been coming here for, since?
Late 90s.
Yeah, the late 90s. So, you know, you've been coming here for quite a while, and you spent so much time out in the field, and you've done your homework, and I think, you know, these other people that come up here that just come up here for one night and think they're an expert, you know, I just tell them, I just say, it doesn't work that way. You really got to do some time. You got to get out there and, you know, spend two or three weekends and really get your ducks in a row and do some research as to what's a satellite and what's not.
Yeah, I think that, in other words, you know, I think in the spirit of what you're saying is that there's a lot more depth to the educational experience afforded by a place like the Gilliland Estate, the Ysetti Ranch, than can be well understood from a first impression or a surface examination. We have to, you know, smell the wine's aroma and taste a little bit and swish it around in our mouth, you know, at first, and then, you know, spend some time with the bottle and get to know it. It's not something that will be properly understood on first impression. And I think we need to emphasize probably the polar differences between the culture of experience that is cultivated and manifests here for the participants, and not only on an individual basis, but on group basis, up to hundreds of people at a time. And the mass, as you refer to it, the social consciousness that's cultivated in our cities, in our mainstream culture, there is a gap. And if I was an ambassador, so to speak, to a different culture, think back in our historic times, you know, diplomacy between the different nations over the centuries, and, you know, those people, the ambassadors, would go and visit and spend time with the people of the other land, and they would gain a depth of understanding that would be impossible from some kind of a 5-minute characterization or some kind of a preconceived, you know, notion that I need everything to fit into. Now, critics of my words might say, well, John, you know, you're such a schmuck, you know, you were sold on the idea of UFOs even before you came to Ysetti. So obviously, you know, you just saw what you wanted to see or whatever. Right. But of course, I took pains to use cameras and, you know, multi-camera setups and stuff to show that there's more objectivity to my, you know, supporting claims. And you, of course, James, have done that very well yourself. This business that one of the outcomes, and of course, this isn't anything you haven't already said, one of the outcomes of exploring these kinds of encounters is that we begin to reflect on the nature of our contemporary society. Mm-hmm. And there are society's values in relation to hard factual experience that we're walking back from. You know, to me, that mountain is real. My journey to the mountain is real. What happened on the mountain is real. And my story, you know, is real. It's I have to look back now at the way I live in a city life in face of my understanding of what life outside the city is like. You know, what is it, you know, what is our society trying to integrate into and to live with when we talk about nature and this planet and the different dimensions of reality and the different intelligences that are here with us undeniably? Those are very important questions. So while, you know, the world of journalism is challenged, you know, for, you know, clear thinking and clear voices who can help shed light on issues, you know, we're challenged now in our age of professional journalism, mm-hmm. where everything's bought and sold, including the truth. We're challenged now to find those people. These experiences require both parties to step forward. You know, the resources here, Gilliland Estate is here for people mm-hmm. to visit privately. And those people now have to step up and be up to the task of coming here in authenticity and giving an authentic measurement to the quality of the experience that's afforded here. And that is something that will be done over time. If someone's looking for a fast food drive-through to enlightenment, they're starting on a false premise. B, you know, they don't want to come to a place where all this gourmet stuff is happening. You know, in Italy, a meal can take all day.
Yeah,
because you're savoring all the flavors, and maybe that's the way. You know, we need to think about the sensual nature of contact, that in order to sense and to assimilate, that we need to give the gift of time. And if we're not willing to offer that much of ourselves, our time, to achieving an understanding, then what kind of students really are we anyways?
Yeah, the one thing about, you know, here is that, you know, one thing is that you've got multiple witnesses, you know, sometimes up to 200 people at a time seeing these events, you know, at conferences. Two, you have multiple cameras, you know, and on the event, and cameras don't have belief systems. You know, they just record what's happening. And when you look at the film, you know, we have to decipher the film, but when you see these things and the way they behave and the size of them, the magnitude of light coming off them, and no running lights, no strobe, you know, making turns, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, appearing, vanishing, jets chasing them, you know, helicopters chasing them, all of these things, you put all that into account. I don't know what other logical conclusion you can come to, but there are those armchair investigators out there that just make decisions based on their own beliefs, basically. You know, like Einstein said, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. You know, no investigation, no checking into these matters. And I think that's something that really needs to be rooted out. You know, we need to challenge these people and say, well, what do you base your opinion on?
Yeah. So simply, you know, that scenario is people are selling themselves short, and they're selling the experience short, and they're selling their audiences short on the audience's potential to have their own experience. I'm just somebody who has a deep rooted sense about the nature, about the veracity of these issues. And so in the face of, you know, skeptical rhetoric, I persisted. I've said, you know, I just had greater faith in my ability to penetrate into the truth than the limits of some proclaimed skeptic about, you know, their encounter some obstacle of ignorance that they couldn't overcome. I just have greater faith, and the cameras and my friendship and colleagues have, you know, have supported that. People at the same time, you know, people hear what they want to hear. The people who have the seed or the kernel of truth within them, they want that to express. They will seek someone who will enable that and support them for that. The people who want to be kept down, you know, and kept under the foot of some other quote unquote authority, you know, and disempowered, et cetera, they want to be lied to. They're going to seek that out. And it's not hard to find examples in our society today on a mass scale of how we appear to be seeking things other than the truth. For we are endorsing so many who use their positions to lie to us prolifically. But if we want to be happy in life and to understand the nature of life, we will eventually have to look within ourselves and to undertake a journey. We won't be able to armchair navigate our way through the universe. We won't be able to drone operate our way to diplomacy, and we won't be able to armchair navigate our way to contact understanding. we can rely on good sources and good people who are continuing to come forward to help us to shape our vision of the world. But we'll also have to be wary of the politics that color the social context in which contact is understood. We will have to continue to be vigilant and sensitive to those issues. And at the same time, we will have to continue to try to manifest, you know, impeccable examples in our own conduct that will continue to inspire others who will further magnify that truth and make sure that, you know, the light outshines the dark 24/7 around these parts.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here, but, you know, we've seen it all. We've seen the planned opposition up there. We've seen people just totally give their power away to messiahs and people that are very disempowering them, you know, because they, you know, the same thing about religion or anything else, you know, it's like people need to make their own personal God, spirit, creator connection, whatever you want to call it. And it's an inward journey. And if you want to experience the many aspects of yourself, you know, it's an inward journey and everything's external on this planet, basically right now. It's sad, but the vast majority of people here on this planet are so driven externally. You know, you have to go to India or South America or somewhere else to get some kind of an internal experience lately. But it's coming to America, though. People are waking up and going within. And I think, you know, it's time to really use discernment and stop with these disempowering programs and stop expecting somebody else to tell you what to believe or how to feel or what to do. Or you know, it's time to, you know, As the song says, it's time for us to lead ourselves, you know, from our own heart and souls, you know, to get through this shift.
Yeah, and the good news is we have it within us to do that. So
exactly.
I think yeah, it's been great. It's been a great season here, James. There's lots more to talk about you know, growth and development here. But I'm always excited to talk to you, and I look forward to more conversations on these different topics with you.
All right. Hey, well, thanks for coming on the show again, and we'll do it again soon.
Awesome, James. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're running out of time, folks, but just as a little heads up, I wanted to make sure people know about the upcoming events. And don't miss the group Skywatch on the 27th, the 28th, and the 29th here in September. And the October 4th, 5th, and 6th, the Exploration of Freedom Technologies Weekend, and Ambassador Training on October 11th through the 13th. And that's the last event here, you know, for the winter is the Ambassador's Training. So don't miss that one. It's going to be a great one. And as far as the engagements off the ranch, don't forget the Ascension Rising Conference in Sedona. And that's November 1st through the 3rd, and the Star Knowledge Conference in Palm Springs. And that's November 8th to the 11th. And just type in Ascension Rising, you know, Conference Sedona or Star Knowledge Conference in Palm Springs, and all the information will come up. So anyway, we're out of time. I can't thank you guys enough for listening. Watch the skies. There's a lot going on. And there's a lot of nutcases out there too lately. It's pretty crazy what we're having to deal with here. So anyway, I guess it's just a lot of fears coming up and a lot of old beliefs and religious beliefs you know, a lot of people have been misled, and unfortunately that's all coming to the surface right now. So it's a good thing. You know, it needs to come up and move on. So anyway, this is James Gillen, your host, signing off. Have a great evening and watch the skies and watch these energies coming in, because this is pretty intense this week, and this harvest moon energy is unbelievable. So anyway, have a great evening and watch the skies. Good night.